a year ago, this would have been a very different conversation than it is today, even though like at the use case level, there's still a lot of similarities. So I think it is just really keeping an eye on like which tool is the right tool for the job.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Thank you everyone for joining and welcome to this week's edition of the Crypto Brief. I'm Matt Allen, and today I'm joined by Dave Shapiro and Jack Neureiter. Today we're going to be talking about Ethereum versus Solana, the tale of two networks. So an exciting episode for everyone today. We're going to explore the blockchain trilemma and how both networks kind of approach these distinct trade-offs. We're going to talk about some of the underlying strategy and culture for each network, and then get into some of the benefits and obstacles faced by both networks and communities, and finally end with kind of what we see on the horizon for both networks. But before we jump into that, I think we have some news stories that we need to cover. So first, I think big news story in the Ethereum camp. The Petra upgrade went live on Thursday, was a successful upgrade, did not break or fork the chain. But I think before we get too deep into that, it's best if listeners just go back and listen to our episode from 2 weeks ago with Kevin Kelly, where we did a great overview of everything in the upgrade. We also had the Genius Act, which did not pass cloture. So it's not moving forward in the Senate, unfortunately. And then I think we also have a big M&A news story. Jack, do you want to cover that?
For sure. Big M&A news this week. Coinbase announced that they've agreed to terms to acquire Deribit, which is the largest crypto options venue, for $2.9 billion. The deal includes $700 million in cash and $11 million in shares of Coinbase stock. They said the deal is set to close by year end, pending regulatory approval and sort of regular final due diligence items. This would set the record for the largest M&A event in crypto history, which follows sort of the prior record setting, which happened this year, which was the Ninja Trader, another derivatives futures platform that Kraken acquired about 2 months ago. According to Coinbase's VP of Institutional Product, Deribit facilitated over $1 trillion in trading volume last year across non-US markets over options and futures. Primarily options is sort of Deribit's specialty. They're the largest options trading venue in crypto. I think there's sort of two key takeaways from this announcement. One is the focus from US spot exchanges on the derivatives market. It's pretty clear. Right. I just sort of mentioned Kraken acquired NinjaTrader, which is more traditional assets, but obviously Kraken being a crypto exchange, you can imagine that, you know, I think they'll see NinjaTrader also sort of covering more crypto assets in the future, I would assume. And then Coinbase acquiring, you know, the largest options and one of the largest derivatives venues in crypto. I think it's indicative that these exchanges see the opportunity and they see potentially the writing on the wall that given the administration change, I think they're seeing the opportunity within derivatives, both offshore, just to have ownership in these large exchanges where we're seeing like the success of Binance, Bybit, Deribit, and how big that opportunity is, but also potentially onshore. And that's obviously just speculating. There's, you know, no news on that front yet, but I would assume given that they're primarily US-based entities, that they're acquiring these businesses with hopes or plans in the future to potentially offer options and perpetual futures on crypto assets to U.S. citizens at some point in the future, obviously pending your regulatory approval and whatnot. And then the other key takeaway in my mind is that crypto equity markets have sort of been starting to show signs of evolution in the first half of 2025. There's been several M&A events that have been announced. Hashnote, which is their primary product, is a money market fund on chain. They were acquired by Circle. sort of just after the presidential inauguration. NinjaTrader, acquired by Kraken, I mentioned. Hidden Road, which is one of the largest crypto prime brokers, is being acquired by Ripple, another crypto company, obviously, that many know. And then now Deribit by Coinbase. Those are sort of some of the big ones that have happened this year, which already outnumbers the number of large acquisitions we've seen in prior years. Circle filed their S-1, which obviously signals their intent to IPO in the imminent future. And then Galaxy Digital also filed to uplist from the Toronto Stock Exchange to the NASDAQ, I believe, at some point this month. So we're seeing a lot of activity, both in private and public markets, for these later stage crypto companies. I think it's something that I expect to continue to heat up, particularly if, you know, crypto asset prices and broad interest continues to grow as it sort of has been year to date.
Yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on, as we expect to see more news stories come out there for sure. And then I think just another news item that we want to cover is the Unichain update. Dave, do you want to cover that?
Sure. So Unichain is a layer 2 network on Ethereum. It was launched by Uniswap or Uniswap Labs, and they are the first L2 to start processing transactions using trusted execution environments and a tool developed by Flashbots called Rollup Boost. So what this does is it guarantees fair transaction ordering and works to prevent negative, or what some call extractive, MEV on Unichain. And they achieve this by having a private and encrypted mempool. So MEV is a somewhat controversial property of blockchains. Some see it as a critical source of revenue for the chain, but at the same time, it sort of harms users' trade execution. It can create more slippage. It's just controversial. So what this will do is it will still allow for non-extractive MEV, so things like arbitrage. So there will still be a revenue source for the validators, but the idea is that it removes some of the more harmful forms of MEV. So I'm watching this closely. I think if this goes well, you'll see a number of other L2s move to do the same thing. I think that it's interesting that Flashbots developed this technology, as they are the big block builders today. So they are sort of the purveyors of MEV as it stands right now. But they're sort of somewhat working to disrupt themselves. So I found that pretty interesting. And the last thing is that Unichain is a DeFi focused L2. So it makes sense that they're the ones to roll this technology out. If they can eliminate extractive NEV on their chain, that will translate to a much better experience for their users.
Yeah, particularly for trading, right?
Particularly for trading.
If I have to pay MEV on every trade, or I get extracted on every trade, that's not very favorable. If you can prevent that, that obviously seems like a pretty big advantage, right?
Definitely. And not to get ahead of ourselves, but different chains have different issues with MEV and trade execution on Solana versus Ethereum, for example, have different levels of MEV. So one chain has significantly worse UX and trade execution for their users than the other, but more on that later.
Yeah, I think that actually transitions nicely into the main conversation and topic that we want to cover today, which is a comparison between Ethereum and Solana. But I think before we really get into the meat and potatoes of that conversation, we need to do a bit of background knowledge and talk about what is known as the blockchain trilemma. So David, do you want to kick us off there?
Sure. So the blockchain scaling trilemma was originally coined by Vitalik Buterin of Ethereum, probably 7 or 8 years ago. And basically, blockchains have three really important properties. You want them to be scalable, you want them to be decentralized, and you want them to be secure. And unfortunately, you can't have all three. If you want to really push hard on decentralization, it usually comes at the cost of the other two. And so a lot of these blockchain networks have to make a decision on what exactly they want to optimize for. So security refers to the defenses that blockchain networks need to have in place to prevent malicious entities from taking over. It ensures the integrity and safety of the data inside of it, and it makes it difficult for bad actors to alter or to manipulate the state. Scalability refers to the capacity of a blockchain to handle a growing amount of work. So a blockchain that's scalable can process a high volume of transactions very quickly and efficiently without significantly increasing the transaction costs or the block times. And then decentralization has to do with where the control over the network is or how it's equally distributed among all the participants, rather than being concentrated into a single or a few central entities. So these three aspects are intertwined in a way that if you want to enhance one, it usually comes in the form of diminishing another. When we're talking about Ethereum versus Solana, Ethereum very clearly optimizes for decentralization. They really push on being credibly neutral, a theme that I'm sure will come up more in this podcast. Whereas a network like Solana is really laser focused on scalability. They want low fees, fast block times, and lots of users using it concurrently. So that is how I would sum up the blockchain scaling trilemma.
Yeah, I think that's a great overview. And just for some context, like if we're talking about transactions per second, like what is the rough order of magnitude difference between the two? Do you have that off the top of your head?
So it depends. It sort of depends on the day and how much congestion is on the network. But I would say Solana is maybe two orders of magnitude higher than Ethereum as far as their TPS goes. A lot of these networks make claims about what their throughput is, but it's very difficult to know what they truly are in production. So, you know, on Solana testnet, you can maybe do tens of thousands of transactions per second, but on their actual production network that is distributed across the globe with a variety of different users, you land on different, usually lower numbers. So Ethereum's throughput is definitely significantly lower, but their nodes, their clients are designed to run on much like lower resourced computers. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, and I think you hit an interesting point there too, right? Like, okay, so Solana can throughput more transactions, but what do they lose as far as either security or decentralization goes? You know, especially if you start to look at like the requirements to run a node or run a validator.
Right, so Solana validators are designed to run on data center server or rack-mounted servers, basically. If you look at what their resource requirements are, Helios says they recommend a 12-core CPU. They recommend 256 gigabytes of RAM. They recommend 5 terabytes or so of storage and a 10 gigabit network connection. So, right, these are data center specs. Whereas, you know, on the Ethereum side, they are really trying to be able to run their clients, whether it be execution clients or others, on much lower spec hardware. So they want people to be able to run this on laptops in their houses or maybe even on their phones. And so that creates a more decentralized network. You know, on the trilemma, right? Ethereum has roughly twice the amount of nodes as Solana. And a lot of that is due to the fact that there are much lower barriers to entry for running Ethereum software.
And sort of on that point, like a large percentage of stake of Solana is dedicated to a small set of validators or is dedicated to data centers that represent large portions of stake. So like TerraSwitch is a privately owned US company hosting validators with a combined 24% of stake, according to Helios. And Latitude SH, Brazilian provider, has a combined 19% of stake. So like we do see like, it's not a, like decentralization, not a one-to-one, like we can't just point to one statistic, but like there is very clearly been ideological trade-offs in the designs of these networks that Ethereum has prioritized decentralization at the expense of like scalability, usability of the base network. And Solana has taken the sort of the opposite approach, of course. And then each is sort of trying to build like more decentralization over time in Solana's case and more usability over time in Ethereum's case. And then, of course, we can talk about like some of the recent stuff from Ethereum, I'm sure we'll get to, but both sort of trying to build at the other's optimization, basically, and become better at the other.
Yeah, it's interesting when you compare both. Like sometimes when I'm thinking about this comparison, I'm comparing Solana to all of the Ethereum L2s. And I'm looking at, all right, what's the TVL on Solana versus what's the combined TVL of all the Ethereum L2s? Even that is an imperfect comparison because all of the assets and liquidity on the L2s are siloed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for a while, Ethereum was saying, move everything to the L2s. L1 is just going to be a settlement layer. And so that comparison held up for a while.
That's really been until very recently, right?
Yeah, it's until very recently. I would say the past month or two. But yeah, now Ethereum has come back and said, okay, well, we welcome activity on the L1 that isn't just settlement activities. You know, we want to raise the gas limit. So now that comparison sort of breaks down a little bit. And so I'm not sure how you take a holistic view and compare both. But, you know, I was listening to an Ethereum versus Solana podcast that came out about a year ago. It's a pretty famous one. It was Anatoly and Justin Drake. And Justin Drake said in this podcast a year ago, there's no future for building applications on Ethereum L1. And I just thought that was very stark compared to where the conversations are today, where they are almost trying to bring some activity back to their L1 network. So I thought that was kind of interesting. My mental model for comparing the two has sort of shifted.
I do think the proof is in sort of the evidence of usage and mindshare, right? Where it seems like, you know, Ethereum has its place and has had its place and hasn't like gone away or been obsoleted by any means. If anything, I think I'm sort of a believer in like, if you start to pivot the vision, you're going to probably see like meaningful interest pick back up on Ethereum and like the story start to change and evolve. And I think that's a positive thing for Ethereum and its ecosystem. But like the proof was in the numbers and the mindshare and in the interest. Like over the last 90 days on Token Terminal, you know, Solana has generated more fee revenue than Ethereum. Over the past year, Ethereum has generated more fee revenue, but not by much. And, you know, a lot of retail users have gone to Solana and used Solana. A lot of asset issuers that issued assets originally on Ethereum have expanded and issued assets on Solana as well. And so it just goes to show you, it's not a good or bad thing. It's just, I think there's been proof that having a scalable L1 has value to it. And also not all users are optimizing for maximum decentralization. Maybe there is a degree of good enough, especially when like a lot of the assets that people are transacting in are like USDT and USDC. Well, those are explicitly centralized assets that can be frozen, that a government could tell the issuers of those assets to, you know, not let somebody touch those assets or to, you know, not redeem those assets. You know, it's not happening, right? But, or not happening right now, but it could happen. And therefore, like decentralization, if you're using those assets, is far less important than like the decentralization of like Bitcoin, which is a non-sovereign asset and doesn't touch any traditional rails or traditional assets.
Yeah, I think that's especially good point as you look at some of the Ethereum L2s as well. For those who aren't familiar, there's a great resource called L2Beat, which actually tracks Ethereum L2s and then has different stages of decentralization for all the Ethereum L2s, with the most decentralized stage being stage 2. And to date, nothing has reached stage two. You know, engineers and developers are working to hit that target. But as you think about decentralization of the L1, like if you're pushing everything onto an L2 that's not even decentralized, like I think that's a great point. That trade-off kind of breaks down.
Yeah, it's sort of ironic in a way. You know, the great criticism thrown at Solana by Ethereum over the years was for being less credibly neutral, less decentralized. But then if you look at many of the L2s on Ethereum, those same criticisms could be thrown at them. Now they are improving. They're making material improvements to become more trustless and more neutral. But it seems like they sort of played the same strategy of like fake it till you make it. So I do think that is, I do think there's some irony there.
Yeah, certainly. So I think have some good thoughts on kind of the pros and cons of focusing on the L1 and Ethereum versus Solana. But maybe we can take a step back and just talk a little bit about strategy and culture between the two chains. You know, does each user base, each community, each chain have their own culture, their own strategy, or are they a bit more blended? And how do you guys view that?
So definitely. I mean, Ethereum culture is deeply into things like decentralization and incredible neutrality. And it seems to matter a lot to Ethereum users, or, you know, a lot of people were brought into this space in the first place by those types of ethos. But as time has gone on, as new users have come on chain, you know, people are drawn in by different things. And so just because Ethereum values those things a lot, doesn't necessarily mean all the users do too. So people have different priorities, people have different reasons for being here. I don't think one is necessarily better than the other, but yeah, it sort of reminds me of programming languages. This is an imperfect comparison because programming languages don't have strong network effects, but you have to choose the right tool for the job. And sometimes, you know, if you're building an application, one programming language might make sense over the other. I think it's going to be similar with building financial applications on chain. The properties of Solana will make sense for certain things. Like if you look at payments, they have fast block times. The UX of payments on Solana is great. But if you want to, say, tokenize a multi-billion dollar asset, it may make more sense to tokenize on a network like Ethereum that is much more optimized for things like decentralization and security.
Yeah, David, I think that's a great point. The use cases on each chain that have taken off have, I would argue, have been primarily different. I mean, you have DeFi that exists on Ethereum and different DeFi projects that allow you to do the similar actions of trading assets or trading assets with leverage on derivatives platforms or borrowing against an asset or whatever it may be. But the size on Ethereum is like, you know, according to DeFi Llama, $60 billion of DeFi TVL on Ethereum, and on Solana, $8.7 billion. So, you know, just Ethereum is an order of magnitude larger. And like, if you think of like the largest blue chip DeFi apps, they're on Ethereum, right? Where the core primitives themselves came from, like an Aave on the lending side or a Uniswap on the trading side. So I think of like the primary use case on Ethereum or what people are doing as like DeFi and then asset issuers, because the TVL is so high, because the network effects and sort of like the trust that has been built around both ecosystems is obviously pretty large and growing. But like on Ethereum, tokenized asset issuers almost always initially issue their asset on Ethereum. And then like on Solana, to your point, payments are like something that we've seen take off, because if you can make faster transactions and they're cheaper and it's from a centralized issuer anyways, then who cares about the decentralization? And if it works, then I would rather use the cheaper and faster chain. And so it makes sense that we're seeing stablecoins on Solana, you know, still far smaller than on Ethereum, I think, currently, but continuing to grow. And then also things like DPIN, where there's like lots of small transactions to reward users or incentivize users for doing something. A lot of that's happening on Solana and not on Ethereum. And again, it's because like the network is sort of optimized to handle something like that potentially a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that that's a great overview. And maybe an interesting aspect that we haven't touched on is meme coins and how that's had an effect here. I don't know if either of you want to wade into those waters at all, but I think, especially if we talk about Solana, it's a bit interesting.
Yeah, I mean, meme coins have, you know, I think a large amount of the fees being paid to use Solana come from things like meme coins. Certainly, in the beginning of this year, it did. But, you know, Ethereum and Uniswap also have a rich history of meme coin trading. It sort of began there. But I think users naturally moved over to Solana because the UX was better. The fees were lower. You know, the Ethereum L1 has struggled with high fees for a long time. And yeah, if that's the game you're playing, it sort of works better on Solana.
Yeah, David, to your point earlier where you said like, you kind of look at least to date, Ethereum has viewed L2s as their competitor to Solana. And I think like last year in particular, where Base like really was seeing higher transaction volumes and traction, is they were competing with Solana in the meme coin frenzy because, you know, who cares if it's a centralized sequencer if you're trading meme coins? Like all you care about is like if you're trading small dollar amounts that it settles quickly and it's a cheap transaction. And so like we were seeing meme coin activity in the Ethereum ecosystem primarily happening from Base and L2 against Solana, basically. You were seeing like the same memes that were being memed as coins and both launching on Solana and Base at the same time. And then people were like arguing over which one is better or not. And like, I think we could all sit here and argue like, or question the longevity of like, if a lot of fees on Solana are attributable to meme coins, then what does that say about the sustainability of that activity? Probably not very sustainable in my opinion, but like potentially it's like testing out the infrastructure and like it's a lot of transactions happening and being settled on Solana. And like, could those become like real payments transactions someday that are sustainable and are, you know, valuable to society and not just speculative meme coin trading? Potentially.
It reminds me a lot of ICOs on Ethereum in 2017, where the activity itself like seemed kind of unserious, but it proved the use case. And then, you know, in the second round, you see kind of more serious use cases like showing up on Ethereum. Meme coins on Solana really reminds me of the ICO phase where everyone was saying, well, it's all garbage, so who cares? But it's sort of proving that the network works and like that it can onboard users. And it's sort of just a matter of finding newer use cases.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think that's a great analogy and a great way to put a bow on that conversation. And maybe just to end here, should we talk a bit about like what's on the horizon for each network and each chain and how that might affect this conversation going forward?
Yeah, so, you know, as far as Ethereum's horizon goes, they want to bring more users on. They want to focus more on app development and over infrastructure. If you look at what the Ethereum Foundation has been spending money on historically, it's like the vast majority of it is infrastructure. And now they're kind of saying, all right, we want to focus more on funding apps that are going to bring more users on chain. So that's sort of what I see for the Ethereum horizon. I think Solana is going to continue to push to sort of be a global price discovery engine. I think they're going to try to continue to get their block times down. And I think they are going to continue to focus on sort of building what they say is a decentralized NASDAQ and really focusing on the app layer.
Yeah, I think that's a great take. I mean, it's to some degree, it's more of the same, right? It's continuing to like optimize and use the latest and greatest hardware to build the fastest machine, basically.
Yeah. I mean, certainly. I think it is going to be an interesting space to continue to watch, especially like just calling back to the beginning of this conversation, David. Like a year ago, this would have been a very different conversation than it is today, even though like at the use case level, there's still a lot of similarities. So I think it is just really keeping an eye on like which tool is the right tool for the job when you look from a use case and developer's perspective. And then from like a protocol development perspective, we'll continue to monitor the upgrades coming to each network and each chain and keep everyone informed. But I think that we can probably end the conversation there. Thank you both for your insights. Thanks everyone for joining today. Thank you to Jack and David, and we'll see everyone in 2 weeks.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2025 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.